ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
We have come to this, the Sunday tradition, unlike any other after championship Saturday. It is the ESPN College Football Podcast. Paul Feinbaum, Matt Barry alongside. Hope everyone enjoyed the football on Saturday. I do want to start off with a full disclosure memo to the dedicated listeners. Paul and I are taping this prior to the release of the final college football rankings. So if you are listening to this and wondering why we're not getting into the playoff matchups, it is because we don't have them while we're taping this. Paul and I have television duties at ESPN during the selection show, so we had to knock it out during the morning. So having said that, Paul, good morning. We believe we know who the four teams are going to be in no particular order: Alabama, Georgia, Cincinnati, Michigan. But let's start with the elephant in the room, and that is Georgia once again not being able to compete at Alabama's level.
Yeah, and Matt, I know there'll be a few people, like about probably 20,000 callers on the Feinbaum show Monday, saying, I told you so, I knew this was going to happen. But you talk to experts all week long. I interview 1,000 of them. I didn't hear anyone lay this one out. I'm sorry. So congratulations to everyone who had it right. But I sat with, including Dan Mullen yesterday, Matt, who played both teams, and he was unequivocal in his assessment that Georgia was the better team. So why does it happen then? Then we start getting into the coaching matchup, and it's on Kirby Smart. This is a, you know, he only has one way to exercise this demon, and that's to win the national championship. Because if he doesn't, Matt, this is going to haunt him deep into the offseason, rightly or wrongly. And things are so bizarre. I've even read some people suggest today they don't even belong in the playoffs. Now, I think that's an extreme take. But the way they performed on the biggest stage, they gave people ammunition to come after them.
Yeah, Paul, all we heard, all you and I heard, all we talked about, Alabama was so dominant throughout the season. There were days where we would just say, or Georgia rather, Georgia was so dominant throughout the season. There were weeks on this podcast, you'd be like, oh, Georgia won again, 35-0. They're just that good. They're just that much better than everybody else. But to watch Alabama hang 41 on them, I believe they had 24 at the half, which is the most that Georgia had given up in a game. And they did it at the half. Bryce Young won the Heisman Trophy on Saturday. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. My problem with Georgia is I would have them, again, this is pre-rankings, Paul, I would drop them down to 4. And I would do the rematch right away, and I'd get it out of the way. Because what we saw yesterday, think about this for a second. You go through the entire season of college football, all building up to an Alabama-Georgia SEC championship that ended up being an absolute dud because Alabama dominated them. Do you really want the risk of your crowning achievement game being a rematch of Alabama-Georgia? I don't.
No, I don't think the country does. And the committee, I'm sure, is in a quandary this morning. But it's... You know, and we'll know, and we do apologize, and normally we wouldn't be doing what we're doing now, but we think it's not going to happen that way, Matt. So if it does, sue me. I played too long. that's a lyric from a Steely Dan song, by the way, in case some of you are wondering why I'm bringing criminal and civil law into our podcast. But it's a fair question, though, nobody really believes this committee evaluates a team on their value, and I can't explain it. And we assumed, now here's where we start assuming things, that this was an exercise the demons game for Georgia, but it wasn't. And one other thing that stands out in the 17 and 18 game, and even in the game last year, which really doesn't matter in this conversation, in the championship and national championship, Georgia had double digit leads, and they did again. And when they were up 10-0, I wonder how many of these, I knew this was going to be Alabama's day, were saying, oh my goodness, this is exactly what some of the pundits said was going to happen.
You're right. 10-0. And you're thinking, uh-oh, Alabama hadn't done much. And then Bryce Young stripes Jamison Williams down the middle of the field. They get on the board, and that's when they took off. And there are several ways I want to attack this. First, you know this conference better than anyone in the country and better than anyone at the network. You know Georgia, you know Alabama, you know all of them. And I know that one of the big criticisms of Kirby Smart in his time at Georgia has been mismanaging the quarterback room, choosing Jake Fromm over Justin Fields, which led to Justin Fields transferring. Jacob Eason, another five-star guy, transfers out. Is this as simple as JT Daniels needs to be playing quarterback of the playoff, or am I just being too simplistic and missing the real problem?
I think that's what you're going to hear. And Matt, I was sitting there in the third, or maybe late in the third, early fourth quarter, after they blew it on fourth down and skewing a field goal. Why didn't JT Daniels come into the game? I know Stetson Bennett got a score after that, but he wasn't going to get three scores. You knew that, and everyone knew that, especially Nick Saban. I just thought that was the moment. Give Saban some of his own medicine with Tua and Jalen Hurts, and let the karma brigade roll. And he didn't do it, and he's going to have to answer that question. And I know we all jump on bandwagons, and we all jump on that Stetson Bennett bandwagon against JT. And I brought it up to a guy on Friday. I said, this Georgia thing with Stetson, and the guy jumped on me like, Stetson Bennett's great. He has never been in this position effectively. He's never come out of this position before. And when he was in it, he looked pedestrian. And we thought the playoffs would be fun, but I didn't think we would have a drama like this. I mean, Matt, this is a Shakespearean drama here with what Kirby Smart is going to do. And he is stubborn. And I think a lot of the goodwill that he has built up is going to ride on this, because even though he's a great recruiter and he's got one of the top four programs in the country, if he gets knocked out by, let's say, Michigan, which we think will be the opponent, how does he explain this season away?
Yeah, you can't. Well, I can explain it away that as of last week's rankings, Georgia's best win is over Clemson, number 20 Clemson. If you look at their schedule, Georgia's best win is over Clemson. Four teams have made the CFP without a win over a team that finished the regular season ranked in the top 15 of the CFP. Alabama, Cincinnati, and Michigan can all make that claim as well. So, look. It was not. No, Kirby sold it in the post game as it's a wake up call. We need to get better over the next month. Which, yes, you do. This is a tough sell on a committee that's been so polarizing throughout the year. There are those that say you don't want the rematch right away. I agree with that. But you know what? I also don't want to go to Indy and see this game again. I just don't. Look. It could produce a classic. Something might change. And maybe Alabama was just extra motivated because they love Atlanta. They love the SEC championship. It was the eighth time they won the SEC as Nick Saban, head coach at Alabama. And as he said afterwards, it was that rat poison that was yummy because everybody was telling everybody how good Georgia was. So maybe it will be a classic. But that left a lot to be desired to say, you know what, that's potentially a national championship rematch.
Yeah, I guess the only counter that the boys out in Grapevine will be thinking is, if both teams earn their way through the semis, then that's what we get. But Matt, I wouldn't be excited to see this game on New Year's Eve again. I've kind of Georgia Alabama out. I mean, they played and that's another argument. And there is somebody made this point yesterday that. This happened. There's a little bit of precedent for this. I think it was 2003. Oklahoma was number one undefeated, and I think they lost by 30 points or more against Kansas State in the Big 12 championship.
Yep, I was there.
Yeah, well, and then they got in, and I think they lost again to LSU. So I don't know. I mean, I know. This is what I'm about to say is going to shoot down the whole idea of a 12 team playoff, which we'll get maybe in your lifetime. Doesn't look like we're going to get it in mine. And these games really cease to matter, and that's all Kirby Smart can hang his head on right now. That okay, we're not SEC champs. Well, Alabama, They weren't the SEC champs in 2017 either, but they haven't taken down that national championship banner yet.
Yeah, that Oklahoma team was allegedly the greatest team to ever put on shoulder pads. Jason White won the Heisman that year. It was in Kansas City, I believe. Yeah, it was Kansas State, but I believe the quarterback was L. Roberson for Kansas State, and Darren Sproles was the so that. And then they went on and lost to Marcus Spears and company in the Sugar Bowl against Nick Saban in Alabama, or Nick Saban in LSU. So look. We'll see what happens. And, it just, again, proves, if you're into that kind of thing, maybe you're not. I had Alabama plus the points all day, all along, because I don't believe in Alabama getting blown out. I've seen it once under Nick Saban. It was the national championship against Clemson when Trevor Lawrence went off. I just didn't think this was going to be that type of game. We expect Alabama to be number one. However, Paul, Michigan 42-3 over Iowa. If they were to be number one, I don't know that many people would complain, because they come in number two and they beat the hell out of Iowa like they should, perhaps staking their claim to a deserved number one ranking. I don't think that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if the committee did that.
Yeah, I mean, the only argument against that, or one of the arguments, would be, okay, who does have the best win of the year? Is it Cincinnati at Notre Dame? Is it Alabama against Georgia? And I think you have to side with Alabama. And what I'm about to say is going to sound crazy, but I am fairly close to the scene, to the sun down here. But this has been a frustrating, horrible season for Alabama. I mean, it has been. I've had countless Alabama fans turn on the coach, turn on the coaches, the coordinators. And when we end the regular season of the championship game, they lost by a field goal at Texas A&M. That's it. So I think you have to make them number one, back to your argument. But let's talk about Michigan for a second. And, I'm absolving myself. I'm not a priest, but I'm going to do it anyway. I did go to Catholic high school. I am so impressed with what Jim Harbaugh has done lately. I think he ought to be National Coach of the Year. I think he has silenced the critics. He can lose to Ohio State as many times as he wants to in the future. I don't really care. But what he's done this year is absolutely remarkable. He's won the Big Ten. He's beaten Ohio State. And he just shredded Iowa, which is a respectable team. Not an elite, but respectable.
Back-to-back weeks, 42 points. That against number two, Ohio State. So Michigan comes into the tournament having beaten number two and number 13, winning the conference championship. They've won five straight since they lost to Michigan State. They're just, I go back to the conversation before. How much better would it be for the brand of college football to get a Michigan-Alabama national championship?
Oh, well, it would be so good.
That's why I just... Look, again, we're going to be able to revisionist history the hell out of this podcast, because it's going to be on after the rankings release, unless Parker, gets this thing edited, our producer, and throws this up immediately. So there will be some listeners. But that you talk about a brand national championship. You get the Midwest market with Michigan. I don't know.
I agree. And by the way, I'm not counting anything for sure, Matt, and I'm not, leaning towards Cincinnati against Alabama or whatever it is, but I do think there's still a little bit of unpredictability left in this season. But last year doesn't count, because Alabama and Ohio State, to me, played in a bubble with COVID. This won't be in a bubble. I mean, you've got two of the strongest programs in the history of the game. And two of the best known coaches. It will be fabulous if that happens.
It is funny though, when you look at Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, how Harbaugh has been the villain of college football for so long. Paul, I find myself rooting for him.
Exactly.
I find myself saying good for Jim Harbaugh, just because he's handled himself so differently.
Yeah, and that's what you have to admire. And Matt, it's about Jim Harbaugh. It's not about the pundits. And we've all had plenty to say. And, I've gotten isolated a little bit, because, I may have been the last one to try to kill him before he beat Ohio State. But I mean, his own fans had turned on him. His own athletic director. I mean, he called him in and said, Jim, you're doing such a good job. We're cutting your salary. That is not a vote of confidence.
But you're taking a pay cut.
Yeah, I mean, that's not. Yeah, I mean, and now I'm reading the award manual is being praised. Well, that's not how you. I mean, Harbaugh. Did, you know, I think he's immune to that, which is good. He is old school. He's from yesteryear. But yeah, it would be remarkable to see that rise. And I'll let Kirby Smart worry about his own path, but it would be pretty remarkable to see.
So Michigan in the college football playoff, as is Cincinnati, the first group of five to ever get in. They handled Houston yesterday, Saturday on Championship Saturday. What can you say about Luke Fickell? They won every game thrown at them. Notre Dame's a great win. They came on late, pummeled SMU, did the same to Houston. They're going to make history. How they handle history remains to be seen. But if there was ever a year to say group of five, you deserve a spot at the table, this is it. The committee can check that off. Check that off the list.
And somebody said, what does it mean to Cincinnati? Well, it means that it will matter in the next couple of years. That glass ceiling has been broken because we're not going to see a college football playoff expansion anytime soon. So when Cincinnati hightails it off to the Big 12, it may make it a little bit easier for the next one, but they do deserve it. And I didn't agree with this 8 weeks ago, like a lot of folks, but I think they punched their ticket in high style and, and we'll find out, last year's Georgia Cincinnati game doesn't matter. It did show that Cincinnati could play with a team that really wasn't great. That Georgia team last year was good, but not as elite as this year's team, right, Matt? I think it's a good day for college football that they are finally entering the party.
Yeah, and I really hope they give likely Alabama a game, because the last thing you want is this entire debate all season. And then to have 42-14 in the semi, if that's the semi, because I think the college football playoffs at an inflection point because of everything that went on this season and everything that went on with the debate of Cincinnati and should we expand? Should we do this? Should we do that? I could argue, and I'm not, I'll argue this against Georgia. Fine. Because I don't want to keep picking on Cincinnati. I'll remove Georgia from the playoff because they're not a conference champ. Is there anyone right now that wants to face Utah? 10-3? I don't think so. So you're going into a playoff, Alabama conference champ, Michigan conference champ, Cincinnati conference champ, Georgia's going to be the at-large. But Cincinnati and the group of five, you get them in, they get blown out, then what? Then the semis are garbage, and then you have a rematch. Going into the TV that we're about to do, that's where I think there's going to be an issue. If the semi is a blowout and then you get an SEC championship rematch, people are going to go into the offseason with a really, really bad taste in their mouth for the playoffs. So at least for Cincinnati and for the sake of this entire season-long argument, I want them to compete in the playoff and prove everybody right that battled for them for 14 weeks.
Well, I think we hear you loud and clear down here in the South, Matt, and I'll.
You gonna do your Brian Kelly accent now?
Now, Matt, I hope nobody hopes for that, but you know what? Maybe if that happens, and maybe it will, then maybe the power brokers in college football will finally come to their senses. Although I'm not optimistic about that. They are so disingenuous in what they've been saying. They have just wasted a lot of time, and there's some nefarious reasons, I think, why they have tried to run the clock out. But I don't think any of that should take away from what Luke Fickell has done. There's no telling how many jobs Luke Fickell has given up to get to this point in time.
Yeah, and you speak, it's a great segue because Luke Fickell will be staying at Cincinnati with the reports this morning that Brent Venables is the leading candidate to become the head coach at Oklahoma. So there's not going to be an opening head coach per se with this job, just because Venable's defensive coordinator at Clemson, but the coaching carousel has been absolutely absurd. Lane Kiffin signed an extension to Ole Miss. He's not going anywhere. I had him just about at every open job in the country. Miami still has a head coach in Manny Diaz, but they're throwing anything they can at Mario Cristobal to come home and be the head coach at the U. And then you had the stuff earlier in the week, Lincoln Riley to USC, Brian Kelly to LSU. Paul, first time you and I have been able to talk about this, because we joked last week, if something major happens, we weren't going to retape the podcast. Well, wouldn't you know it, that evening, Lincoln Riley to USC, day after, Brian Kelly to LSU, because it's your neck of the woods. The LSU hiring has been fascinating, because there's been so much tabloid type stories surrounding it. I don't even know where to begin with this one.
Well, you start with an athletic director who the media really did paint into a corner. What I'm talking about is Scott Woodward, who has the reputation. He hired Peterson at Washington, Jimbo at A&M, and some other coaches in different sports at LSU. And I think he was fighting his own press clippings, thinking that he had to hire somebody big. And there are not many big coaches out there to bring in. And clearly, because Trace Armstrong represents Lincoln, Riley, and Kelly, and I think he also represents the athletic director down there, he knew Kelly was interested. And I don't know how to separate fact from fiction in terms of which jobs Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly really wanted. But I think Lincoln Riley made a smart move getting out of Oklahoma to go to SC. I don't buy the SEC scenario. I don't think Lincoln Riley was worried 3 or 4 years down the road about the SEC. He knows he can recruit in Southern California. Brian Kelly was a different selection. But I think Kelly waved the white flag. He said, I don't think I can win here. I don't think I can win a national championship here. And Matt, this is another thing that I cannot prove. I think Brian Kelly got some weird vibes about Marcus Freeman, too, that there was a really strong push underneath about Marcus Freeman's ascent. Remember, he was at Cincinnati a year ago, nearly went to LSU as a defensive coordinator. And I don't think he was running away from that, but I think he feared that what if I have a bad year in a year or two? Am I going to get thrown overboard? Because there's a lot of people that are whispering Marcus Freeman's name. He took the money and he ran. Will it be successful? I think it will, because I don't think it's that hard to win at LSU. Now, yeah, is he really off to a clumsy start? I interviewed him the other day. I thought he was really good in the conversation, but he's not. This is not a TV personality. In Brian, I mean, he can be he's got a little Belichick in him. He's got a little crankiness in him. He grew up in Boston. He spent his life in the Midwest, and now he's trying to talk Cajun.
That's the thing. That was the clumsy part to me. There were a couple things that were clumsy out of him. One, the departure, the fly back to South Bend, the 3.5 minute meeting, how he handled it. You look, coaches are never going to get a gold star for how they handle leaving their prior program. It's always clunky and disrespectful in some way, shape, or form, but it happens. He came off not looking great with that. Then he tried to hire all of his assistants. What's it say about this guy that none of the assistants wanted to come with him? I know Marcus Freeman elevated a head coach at Notre Dame. Tommy Reese wanted to stay. But then the thing at the basketball game 24 hours later, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that he was trying to say another word. Sometimes you can combine words and it comes out funny. And I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for family, like how that came out weird. And then the sentence after that, we are just so happy to be here. Paul, here's the problem with that. It goes down to authenticity. And all anyone in the South or anyone anywhere wants you to do is just be authentic, be yourself. You got the head coaching job being Brian Kelly from Massachusetts in the Midwest. Be Brian Kelly from Massachusetts in the Midwest. No one expects you to go down there and drop a million bless your hearts in the living room. Go down there, coach, get the talent, and win. I just don't understand. I don't know if he was happy. I don't know why that happened, but we had fun with it. but you kind of have to do a little dog head tilt and say, like, from now on, at least for a while, people are going to be poking at his authenticity because he didn't have a great reputation for the 24 hours prior to it. Then that pops out and you're thinking, oh, now this guy's acting like he's Southern. What the hell is this?
Well, I was talking to Dan Mullen about this in Atlanta over the weekend, and he said something. He said, there's no way you can leave. Well, you know, he said, you know, when I left Mississippi State, I tried to do the right thing. Nobody ever does the right thing because there's always going to be raw feelings. It's like when you were in high school and, you know, your girlfriend dumped you. I mean, there's no really classy way to do it, is there? I mean, you're out. I mean, and right. So I don't care about the 2-minute meeting. But I agree with you. I don't know until we get more clarification. I think Brian Kelly would be smart to try to get in front of that. But it's already been 4 days, so there's no way to get in front of it. And now it's a matter of, you know, can he find the right staff and can he recruit? And, you know, he's already making changes. He got rid of a guy that's been part of that organization for 30 years. You're going to get that. You have to make changes. And I think he will be okay because ultimately, Matt, LSU is not hard to recruit to. I mean, that is such a great state. And, you know, there are a lot of people that recruit for them. So, you know, these little things will be good fodder for us and talk show hosts. I don't think a single recruit is going to refrain from signing in a week and a half because he can't speak Southern.
Grade the hire.
I give it an A. And I say that because of the last two hires, Les Miles and Ed Ogeron. I think it's right. A better hire than either one. And yeah, and I know you can come at me and say, well, they both won national championships. Well, they did. But Les Miles was a clown, okay? And, you know, he inherited a lot of the great Nick Saban players, which he won a national championship with, and he should have won two or three more. Ogeron hit lightning in a bottle. Everyone knows that story, and there's no reason to retell it. But, it was the little things about Ogeron that got him fired, the off-the-field stuff. That, you know, he was a capable coach, although the program did implode over the last 2 years.
And look, we have the ability to look now at the hirings across the country. There's still some to be made, but I would say that both USC, the two marquee openings in my mind, well, not in my mind, in everyone's mind, at least going into the coaching carousel, Oklahoma ended up being another one, but I think both USC and Notre Dame nailed it. I really think they nailed it. And you can talk about Lincoln Riley and him making it to the playoff with number one overall picks and Heisman Trophy winners and falling short. He's going to be able to recruit out in LA. He is going to be able to win a winnable conference, especially if Mario Cristobal heads to Miami. There was a report late last night from a columnist or a beat writer from the Oregonian that said that if Mario Cristobal were to leave, that Oregon would be prepared to make Chip Kelly their leading candidate, which could you imagine if that happened? But here we are. I love the silly season. I love the way that it has all these rumors. We're tracking plane tails. We're yelling at ADs for making wrong hires. We're faking accents. But it all comes down to this. Teams got better, and LSU got a good football coach who, if he can just stay out of his own way, he can make LSU into a national power year in and year out. Not this 2019 stuff and then fall off. Year in and year out, 10 wins a year, playing for the SEC West, playing for an SEC championship.
He can, and I think he will. And I know that if – the easiest thing in the world to do this week is to take shots at Brian Kelly, but I'm not going to because I genuinely believe, Matt, if you're objective and you say, okay, who are, you know, the 5 to 10 best coaches in the country? I mean, he's in there. And the thing that I'm impressed the most about with Kelly, it's kind of the same reason that I suddenly fallen for Jim Harbaugh. He 5 years ago, he was close to the end and he rebooted. He reshuffled the staff. He recommitted himself, and he came out of the depths of despair. And I always admire somebody that can do that on the run. It's very difficult to do that when you're in a pressure cooker like Notre Dame. And he did.
Winningest coach in Notre Dame history, 12 seasons. I mean, that's remarkable when you think about escaping the national spotlight of a job like Notre Dame with everything that goes along with it. To leave on your own accord and not get shoved out, it's going to go down as one of the great stories in college football history. I don't know that a lot of people like that Notre Dame was essentially a stepping stone for Brian Kelly, but he's got one more job at hand, and that's down in the South at LSU. So again, we appreciate Paul and I have to get to our TV duties. This week's going to be a little shorter than normal because we have a ton of stuff going on this afternoon. We appreciate all the support this year on the podcast. We're going to keep it going through bowl season. But again, pre-rankings release, got some coaching in there.
Write the headline.
Let's each write the headline, what you believe the rankings will be when they're released, and then we can make fun of ourselves for being completely right or wrong. Actually, not what we think they will be, what we want them to be. Let's do that.
Well, I just saw this headline, and I'm going to – not that I'm a plagiarist, but I just saw the headline in the Tuscaloosa News, and Matt, it's too good not to share with the audience. There's a picture of the team holding up the trophy, and in big block letters it says, "The Empire Strikes Back." I mean,
so
that,
good.
That sums it up. I'm embarrassed to try to top that because that's really what's happened. And, you know, nobody gets more benefit of the doubt than Nick Saban. And I will be honest, I cringed a couple of times this week. I would be arguing with a caller and the guy would say, "Paul, Bama's going to win." There I go trying to do a Southern accent. And I would say, give me a reason. Nick Saban. And you know what, Matt? I kind of nodded my head a little bit, rolled my eyes. But the next time somebody says that, I'm going to say, you better believe it. Nick Saban. Because, I mean, you know, it was one of his greatest victories ever. And I know it's not going – it may not matter as much if he wins the title or if he doesn't win the title. But, you know, he's like all the greats. I mean, how many times during his prime, there's Tiger and some hotshot – Bob May or somebody else in the final round of a major, and somebody would say, "Tiger's going down, Matt," and you'd look at him, "Are you out of your mind?" But this time, we all thought the king was going down,
and they showed everyone. They just laughed. They laughed their way back to Tuscaloosa. You know, they were giving Georgia, patting them on the helmet. Bless your heart, you guys thought this was your league. No. Still our league. So here's what I truly hope happens, Paul Feinbaum. Here's what I truly hope happens when the committee releases their rankings. I really, really hope that it's an opportunity for us to see a national championship that we didn't see a week ago on SEC Championship Week. I hope they do the smart thing and they find a way to avoid an Alabama-Georgia rematch in the national championship. So I would, if I were the committee, if I were in that room in Grapevine, I would go Alabama 1, Michigan 2, Cincinnati 3. Those are your conference champions. And then I'd go Georgia 4. That's your at-large. Tee those two up in Miami, and let's just get this thing over with and let Cincinnati and Michigan play for the right to play for a national championship.
Well, one thing that I will say to you, Matt, no one is going to misunderstand your feelings after listening to this podcast.
Thank you, Paul.
I admire you for making it crystal
Let's
clear.
Let's go. Come at me, people. I got to go do – we're going to be on TV later together. We'll have the benefit of the doubt of knowing when we get on TV. Yeah. So you and I will have a little conversation about this.
Now you know I don't want to lengthen this, but you know, for the betterment of what I do for a living, I have to want Alabama and Georgia. It's just such chaos for the next 3 to 4 weeks in the national championship. I mean, that's the kind of game, Matt, that I will feast off of until media days in July. So
you know what?
And I hope you're wrong.
It's going to be amazing then when it's Cincinnati and Michigan playing in Indianapolis.
That's a good one.
For Paul Feinbaum, I'm Matt Berry. We're going to go get suited and booted and do some TV. Hope everyone has a great week. Thank you for listening to the ESPN College Football Podcast. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is a podcast that brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests, such as NFL analyst Dominic Foxworth, insider and fantasy-focused football host Field Yates, and ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr. If you like X's and O's, analytics, and probably too much dog talk, Lenny is a dog, then give The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcasts.